The beginning begins, obviously enough, with the quotation that's in the title, and that now is the winter of our discontent, made glorious summer by this son of York, and New York, and Boston, and Chicago politics, and Honolulu, and Jakarta, and Nairobi, and an entire world that has come together in this winter that precedes what we hope will be a spring and eventually a glorious summer. There is winter. This is inarguable. Even with global warming, there is winter. And there is discontent. And there is also hope. Because without hope, we shrink into passivity and let the very worst happen to us. As human beings, we are faced with tremendous challenges and tremendous opportunities. This is a time when I was reminded, and I used the quotation in the opening words, of the Greek philosopher Terence, who said, "Nothing human is foreign to me." And often people take that as something that's highly optimistic and universalistic and talks about, gee, what a guy Terence was. But it talks really about how nothing human on the good side is foreign to me and nothing human on the bad side, in our inhumanity, is foreign to me. We are capable of such appalling transgressions against ourselves, our planet, our fellow beings, and such glorious and wonderful generosity and open-heartedness to each other. And in almost all moments of our lives, we have choices to make about what we do, what we don't do, what we tolerate, what we speak about, and about what we remain silent. We have these minds that create science and explore and understand our world, and so often the science that could be fixing problems and healing us and engaging against diseases is used to burn and to bomb and to destroy. It is not the science that is bad. It is the choices that we make. It is what we do with the fire that Prometheus brought down. Do we burn or do we warm? Do we destroy or do we illuminate? This is the human choice that we have at every moment. We are today in this world beset with problems and to stay with Shakespeare for a bit, and a sea of woes. We look around the world and we see war and chaos, brutality, and destruction, none of which would have surprised Terence, by the way. He would have understood the beauty of the cathedrals of the Renaissance and the horrors of the Inquisition. He would have understood how it is that we are able to kill one another as human beings in the name of a God of love or in the name of peace-loving countries at war to destroy each other. All of this is part of the great spectrum of humanity's inhumanity and humanity's generosity. Today, when we look around the world, we see that we have not much advanced the cause of peace in the last, not simply 8 years, but in the last 50 years. We are engaged in two shooting wars directly in countries that don't much like us for some reason and have an identity not completely nationalist because they're not nations except when foreigners come in, and then they will pull together to expel that foreign entity, however well-meaning it might be. And whether that's a British Empire or a Soviet Empire or American interests or generosity, however you understand it, there is a history in both Iraq and in Afghanistan of expelling the foreign element. and Americans understand the ethnicities and the tribalisms in our own society poorly, and in the world almost not at all. We are watching the horrors of what's going on directly, not only in Iraq, but right now in Gaza. And everybody's right and everybody's justified. And the reason that I am no longer in international relations, and that's my degree, international relations, politics, economics, and military strategy, is that everybody is right. And when they do this, you got to do that. And then when you do that, they got to do the other thing. And everyone's playing the game in Gaza, clueless and eyeless in Gaza. And it doesn't make any difference if you're right. It doesn't make any difference if you're mad. It doesn't make any difference if you're scared. It doesn't make any difference if you feel justified. It's not working. It's the Dr. Phil question. After 60 years of this, how's this working for you? I know that's an amoral examination, but it simply is not working. And what is it that makes the world work? What is it that draws the interests of America and world states? Look at Africa, where there is megadeath every year, where there's tribalism underneath the nationalism, where there are fratricidal, in my view almost all wars are senseless wars and slaughter, where millions die. Look again at Africa, where millions and tens of millions die of preventable diseases, of starvation, of malnutrition, of cholera, from dirty water, and from maldistribution because warlords use food as a weapon, and the deprivation of food as a weapon. And look at the world's tremendous interest. There isn't any. We don't care as a world. This is not a guilt rap on you. Cameras are tired of starving black children in Africa, I guess. They don't count. Do they not count because they're black? Well, maybe that isn't the problem. Zimbabwe has an 11% annual inflation rate at the moment. 11%. Becoming a millionaire is a move down in status for almost everybody. And it's a miserable, rotten regime. The dictator who started off good, and the problem, of course, with benevolent tyrants is it's hard to keep them benevolent. It's easy to keep them tyrants. And it's a tragedy. But the world is helpless because their sovereignty, their nation states. Pirates from Somalia took yachts and small cargo ships for years. But we couldn't do anything about it. The world wasn't interested. They started taking oil tankers, and the world stirred itself into action. Because you can kill, you can murder, you can starve, you can let die by abuse and neglect, you can avert your gaze from the pain that is going on, but mess with our oil supply and there will be hell to pay, and all of a sudden they have that right to freedom also. I have to say, as somebody who has traditionally opposed the death penalty, when I heard that five of the Somali pirates drowned trying to escape with their $3 million of ransom, I was not overly upset. It felt more like karma to me. I also liked the fact that they complained they didn't release the ship as soon as the money came in because the money was a little short. The people who had delivered the money had taken a transaction fee. And I am not making this up, as Dave Barry would say. And the Somali pirates said, "We're the criminals here. This isn't right. They shouldn't be taking our money. We took all the risk. This isn't right." Our amount of insight into ourselves is often that of a Somali pirate. We just don't understand the complexity of it all. And the world becomes interested when the world becomes interested, not based on principles of sovereignty. If Zimbabwe had oil, I think maybe they would be allowed the blessings of liberty and the interests of the world. This is a sad state of human affairs. The erosion at home of our own infrastructure, of our roads, of our bridges, of so much of what makes life smooth and can make life smooth, the electrical grid, all of these things are real problems, and they are also metaphors for the erosion of our sense of ourselves as Americans. We no longer automatically assume the position that we are the good guys, well-meaning, and if we make mistakes, they're mistakes of the heart and generosity. We are questioning ourselves, and that's not a bad thing. It's an appropriate thing to do, but it is a change for America. Because in looking at the world, we have to look at what we have done and what we have not done, what we claim responsibility for and what we feel is okay to walk away from. We have been a highly insular people between our shining seas, reaching out sometimes to defend ourselves and sometimes to protect our economic interests, but feeling that in some ways we are not a part of the larger world in the way that Europe and Asia and Africa are. I think that that is an illusion that is going to disappear. We live in a time of snakes, of snake charmers, snake handlers, and snake oil salesmen. The Bible is right. There's always a snake in the garden, and we can see most of those snakes now, and they are often the same snakes. They are fear, violence, and greed. And we can decide how to engage them. There are snakes in the garden, but there is also, it's important to remember, a garden that we can together make of this world, make of this earth, together, with our own acts of kindness, of generosity, of engagement, of open-heartedness, of understanding that nothing human, the great impulses and the bad impulses, are foreign to us. And no one, any place in the world, is a foreigner to us. Those people in Africa, in Asia, those people who are under brutality and under starvation, they are our concern, whether they have petrol oil or olive oil or canola oil or no oil at all. It is their humanity that gives them a place at our table. This is a time for me of some considerable hope. Yes, there are things that are negative out there in the world. Yes, there is a great know-nothing-ism out there in American society. It never occurred to me when I was a very young person and saw the film Inherit the Wind that we would still be litigating the theory of evolution 40, 50 years later. It's clear to me that the proof that there is no evolution is manifest by the people who believe there is no evolution because they are stuck on the flat earth with active denial. Where does this know-nothing-ism come from? Well, part of it is from the know-it-all-ism. I want to point out, and I don't mean this politically exactly, but we have the first president of the United States to have an MBA, and it's from Harvard. Dr. Phil says, how's that working for you? The experts don't seem that expert in foreign policy, in economics. And let's face it, all economics is faith-based, and we have lost our faith. And our experts, clearly, whatever goodwill they have, are not sure what it is that we should be doing in order to help ourselves. Whatever our generosity of impulse, There are no sure and certain answers. And so some people say, look, it's just too complicated. Nobody knows anything about anything at all. Look at all these smart people who bought into a Ponzi scheme. Well, it's true. There's a herd mentality. Smart people in one area are assumed to be smart in another. So we follow them over the cliff. Smart is different from wise. And we all know that, but we forget it. Smart is different from wise. This sermon is supposed to be about an inauguration. I am filled with a sense of hope. I don't have the unrealistic expectations that everything's going to be great. We have not elected a Messiah, although he was denied room at the inn being Blair House, for the ex-Prime Minister of Australia. Nothing against Australia, but, I mean, seriously, folks. He is going to disappoint. He's already disappointed me a couple of times, particularly with the Reverend Rick Warren, to do the invocation. I was waiting for the call for weeks. I sat by the phone, and this was going to be my chance, but Rick Warren down in South County got it. It's not personal. It is deeply personal. It's the wrong message to start a presidency with, in my view. But he's going to disappoint me. He's going to disappoint himself because the promises made in good faith get intruded upon by reality. And so, as they say in another great work of literature, The Princess Bride, prepare to live with disappointment. It happens. But there's something unique that has happened. We have not arrived at the promised land, but we have reached a major milestone in electing someone to office who comes from a truly unique background. Yes, we are all unique, but not many of us can claim so directly the unique status and experiences and the skill set that the new president will bring to office. He has been outsider and insider at the same time. He is not your average Honolulu person. He is half black. He is not your average student at Pepperdine in Eagle Rock. He is not your regular son of Occidental at Eagle Rock. In the first draft of this, I made a mistake, and I sent it out to a focus group, and people just poured in with, "No, Bush didn't go to Princeton; he went to Yale." And I was so impressed that the people that read my stuff picked that up. And so, yes, Occidental, not Pepperdine. That he brings this unique set of experiences from the rough and tumble of Chicago politics. He's not the average product of a single mother. He's not the average product of Harvard Law. He has been, in his life, somebody who has had to adjust to a variety of social, political, religious, and philosophical conditions. He has had to be a builder of bridges. He has had to be the bridge. And I think that that's what Clinton was talking about, Bill Clinton, when he talked about a bridge to the 21st century. There's a bridge. And bridges go in two directions. They bring things together. A bridge between past and future. A future that we have to go forward to together, a future that will not write itself, that is not automatic, but calls upon our active involvement and engagement, and a bridge back to who we were as individuals and as a nation. Back to a sense of optimism and confidence tempered by humility that our hearts are in the right place. a bridge that will bring people and peoples and nations together, that will have a view from Africa, where his father was from, to Jakarta, where he spent some of his youth, to the melting pot of Hawaii, to the rough and tumble of Chicago, to the craziness of Washington. Someone who has been, at least by affect, at ease in all of these environments and sees the problems, the challenges, and the hope of bringing people together. A president will not solve our problems. Inaugurating a president and voting a president does not create the programs and the policies. It's only a beginning and an opportunity. The heavy lifting has to be done by people of all faiths, of all races, tribes, ethnicities, and indeed nations, to make this world not perfect, but better. And that's something that his election signifies and gives an appearance of. But the appearance becomes a reality when we put our shoulders to the wheel, when we put our values to work, when they find expression in our hopes, in our hearts, and ultimately in our hands. We are beginning a new day, and together we can turn this winter of our discontent into glorious summer. The season will arrive by itself, but the reality of summer can only be brought by all of us together.